This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back into Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I remain Joshua Briscoe, and I want to talk about some of the interesting things going on in the NFL right now. A lot of it being financially related, which will have a lot of implications for the Chiefs and everyone surrounding them. And then a lot of things going on in the league right now, like some huge quarterback names who maybe want to be moved. Maybe it makes sense. Maybe it doesn't. There's some guys that I think you want to have on your radar for maybe the Chiefs could potentially bring in free agency this year. Just a lot of moving parts and a lot of really interesting subjects, even in what is technically supposed to be one of the quietest parts of the NFL offseason cycle. Just hasn't been very quiet, which I have certainly no problem with. We got some of the best analysis you'll get on any of those topics with Matt Verderam of FanSided on Almost Entirely Sports on Friday. We'll bring it back to you here now. Not the whole conversation, but the whole thing. You got to go check it out in the podcast page. Just search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts. But we'll bring you a little bit of the good stuff here. Matt Verderam helped us understand a lot of those things, starting off with what this main new Disney deal means for the NFL and for the salary cap. These TV deals are ballooning across the board. The networks with their Sunday games, Thursday Night Football, seems like those are going to explode in a huge way financially. But this Disney deal was newer news, and that was sort of coming out on Friday night. And it sounds like just another reason we can expect the salary cap to maybe not go way down, potentially even stay flat from last year to this year, even with all of the financial implications of the COVID pandemic that changed so many things about the salary cap and the financial expectations coming into this year.
So I am not a TV media reporter. If it doesn't have to do with stuff on the field, I'm probably useless to you. I promise to try to do better. But from what I understand, from what I read, from other people who report on this stuff and do so all the time, like you mentioned, Sports Business Journal, Peter King is on top of this stuff all the time. It seems as though those network, the NBC, the CBS, the Fox, the main packages, the Sunday package, it seems as though those are going along pretty swimmingly. And you're right. It could double in size, which is just, when you figure what it already is, and here's the thing that's crazy, right? You always get the guys like, you know, football's dying. Yeah? Because the NBC's already paying a fortune. And it was like, you know what's still worth it? Double the price.
Yeah.
Still worth. So those seem to be going well. The problem they were having was with the Thursday and the Monday night package. So I don't know where Thursday night stands, but with the Disney company, ESPN, ABC, locking down Monday again, that's a big deal. Like, it seems as though, from what I read and from what I understand, is that the Sunday packages, those are going to be fairly easy to kind of figure out to find or print on. The Monday package was hard. The Thursday package, usually that might go to Amazon. That's huge for the cap for this reason. Like, they have not set a cap. They've set what could be the floor, which is 180, but they haven't set an idea of exactly what the cap number is going to be. Teams are all in a holding pattern. Agents are in a holding pattern. And so this news coming down, look, nobody wants this cap to go down. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Teams, players, agents. So if there's this huge influx of cash, that's big. Now, does it guarantee the cap's not going to go down? No, but it gives the league and the players' union a real avenue to go, you know what, let's take some of that money that maybe will make the cap go to 220 next year. Let's take it, keep it at 200 this year, and then maybe we go to 210 instead of 220, but fine, who cares? Like, we'll live with that little bit of incremental increase, because you're right. I remember coming on your show, I talked to multiple sources at the Combine who said, yeah. Now, this, keep in mind, this is right before coronavirus exploded. They were like, yeah, it might go up to 240. Like that, it may not go all the way up there, but it might get to 240, probably at least get to 225. And then the coronavirus happened, and obviously everything went to hell. But it was interesting. And, yeah, now this TV money could be a game changer. It would keep a lot of teams from having to cut a lot of really good players.
Yeah, and so I'm curious how much you think it would specifically impact, like, the Chiefs compared to everyone else, understanding that obviously a higher cap means more money to spend for everybody. And even if you're not specific on the Chiefs, like, you've got the class of teams that are way over the cap as of right now, if we say it gets set at 180, 185 or something. Then you've got the teams that are way under the cap, and you've got a bunch of teams that are right around it. The Chiefs could basically, you know, they could cut Eric Fisher and restructure Tyrann Mathieu and extend him, and they would be doing some pretty okay math. They restructure Mahomes' deal a little bit. They're not in cap hell that a couple other teams are, but does that move, you know, let's say that it goes up an extra, let's say it ends up being closer to a flat cap. Who does that help the most, or who does that not really benefit in terms of teams that have a lot of space, not a lot of space, or are way over?
So some teams that have a lot of space that are of consequence, teams like Indianapolis, New England, I'll throw Washington in there since it won, you know, the football team won the division. Those teams already have a lot of space. So I actually think I don't want to say it hurts them, because who doesn't want more cap space? But it kind of levels the playing field a little bit in free agency. Mm-hmm. So maybe from that aspect, there are actually a couple of the teams who aren't thrilled that it could possibly be flat. And then you got the other side of the spectrum. If the cap is flat, the Saints are still $50 million over it, which is just unbelievable. But that's where they are. The Eagles desperately could use the cap to go up. Pittsburgh, Green Bay, those are probably the top four that you'll look at. You know, the Rams are another one. Now, Kansas City's interesting. If the cap ends up being flat, the Chiefs are, depending on the math, $4 to $5 million over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's nothing.
Yeah.
They could convert Mahomes' contract and save $17 million, okay? They can extend Mathieu and save, depending on the number, roughly $12 to $13 million this year. If they cut Eric Fisher, that saves $12 million. I mean, the Chiefs could all of a sudden find themselves basically $40 million cap space. Now, you got to sign some guys. You got to fill out the roster. But I think if you're a Chiefs fan, not even to be cap compliant, but just in general, you want the cap to go up. Because, yes, you know, you always hear the argument, well, it's even for all teams. No, it's not. No, it's not. Like, because, okay, if the cap goes up and the Lions now have all this money, okay, great, they're still the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
They have to fill out 12 spots.
Right.
Right? Like, they have to upgrade to 12 different spots. If you're the Chiefs, you're like, cool, now we have $30 million in cap space we need to tackle.
Right.
That's it, right? Like, so it's not – the Chiefs aren't trying to fill as many starting spots as Cincinnati or Detroit, or even a team like the Raiders.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are looking at this thing going, all right, cool. We need a number two receiver and a tackle and maybe a complimentary edge rusher, and we're pretty good. So, yeah, if Brett Veach wakes up on St. Patrick's Day, which is the official opening of free agency, although tampering opens 2 days earlier, if he wakes up and he has $25 million of cap space, Brett Veach is a very happy man.
Yeah.
And I think he could do a lot of damage with that money.
Do you have a feel at this point? This is obviously still a little bit out in advance, and I know there's a million different ways things could play out, but do you have any sort of feel at all that, if the Chiefs were going to make, if they were going to pull the trigger on somebody whose first-year cap hit might be around $10 million, or obviously they want to lower it, and the average value of the whole deal is maybe 15. One of those guys that is a higher-priced free agent, it's probably not Allen Robinson, but somebody who is more than just sort of your vet coming into plug-and-play. Is there a guy or even a position group that you think right now the Chiefs could be looking at making a splash at if they do get a little more, maybe a little more cap space than they were expecting 2 days ago?
So I'll list a few guys, but I'll preface that by saying it's completely my opinion.
Sure.
It's not any source thing. It's just kind of, this is what I think might happen. The part I can tell you is just talking to people around the league, lead conversations, people who, are familiar with the Chiefs and what they need and whatnot. There's an expectation that, first of all, I don't think it's breaking news here. They like to upgrade up front.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, look, they might lose Watkins and Robinson, receiver. And then the one position I really would watch, if I'm a Chiefs fan, watch for the edge rushers.
Yeah.
Because they aren't prevalent in this draft. It's not a great draft for that. It is, however, a great draft for the offensive line and for the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the Chiefs and you're maybe looking at some of those positions, you might go, look, we're not going to pay out the nose for a receiver or for a tackle. We'd like to get one, but if we don't, we feel like we can get him in the draft. Edge rush No, we need to do something about that in free agency. And I look at free agency, and I think Trey Hendrickson makes a lot of sense for them. Mm. I would encourage people, if they haven't, The Athletic as a subscription, go read your buddy, my buddy, Nate Taylor, who I thought laid out a couple of really good options. And I totally agree with a handful of them. Like he mentioned Trey Hendrickson in one of his pieces. I think, you know, Romeo Okwara, who people are probably like, who? He had 10 sacks for the Lions last year coming off a rookie deal. A couple of years ago, 7.5. I'll give you a guy who I know teams value a lot more than it feels like the national media. Nico Autry, 30 years old, defensive tackle who can play a little bit of end as well. He's at 20 sacks in the last 3 years. The Colts had 7.5 this past season. He's a guy who brings versatility. I talked to a source yesterday who told me, look, the Colts are interested in re-signing him, but expect that he'll have a really good market if he gets to free agency. And then the same with the Colts, Justin Houston.
I was wondering if you would dare to mention his name.
Like, Justin Houston would be perfect for the Chiefs right now. Now, would he go there? Would the Chiefs bring him back? I don't know. I have no idea. I haven't asked. I'm not sure. Justin Houston, from a fit standpoint, would be a really, really good fit. And again, you know, fan-sided, Matt Lombardo, actually, fan-sided reported that he is drawing interest from the Colts to re-sign, but also, again, another guy would have a nice market. Offensively, real quick, I think Trent Williams is the prize at tackle. Would the Chiefs spend that kind of money? Maybe. I'll say this about Veach. You go look at his history. He's a big game hunter.
Yep.
He does not believe in going out and getting, like, the seventh best guy in a position.
Right.
That's not how he operates. So Trent Williams at receiver, I agree with you. I don't think Robinson's a play, but could they go out and try to get like Corey Davis or Marvin Jones or Juju Smith-Schuster? I could see it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be shocked.
One guy that's not in that category at all, but somebody you had tweeted about earlier this week that I think is kind of interesting and very much also fits within the category of a Brett Veach type of reclamation project. Isaiah Wilson was a 29th overall pick for the Titans last draft. He had some off-the-field stuff. He tweeted that he's done with football as a Titan. It sounds like they're trying to move on from him for a late-round pick. Obviously, everything there, I think, is fairly hinging on, do the Chiefs think he's a head case, or do they think that he would be better off in a new situation? But if you can get a first-round talent on the offensive line for a fifth or a sixth-round pick, that does seem like a very Veach thing to do.
Brett Veach loves first-round picks who are reclamation projects.
Yep.
Loves them. Now, some have failed. Some have succeeded. Okay, I know people sit here, Cam Irving, and they roll their eyes. Cam Irving was a success for the Chiefs.
Hmm.
He came in. He was a really good depth piece. All right, he wasn't good at tackle. That's fine. Cam Irving was worth the late-round pick they gave up to get him.
Yeah.
He ended up having two contracts in Kansas City. He was fine. Helped them win a Super Bowl. Darren Lee was a failure. They brought in Darren Lee.
Yeah.
Didn't pan out. Didn't matter. But then you start looking at other guys. Again, Reggie Ragland was the second-round pick. Yep. Reggie Ragland helped them win a Super Bowl.
Yep.
Like, it worked out. That was, and he was a first-round talent who fell at the beginning of the second round. But you look at DeAndre Baker.
Yep.
Then we'll see. We don't know whether that's a success or a failure yet. But, you know, DeAndre Baker had some off-the-field stuff.
Yep.
And he's another kid, by the way, out of the University of Georgia. That's where Isaiah Wilson comes from. Now, Isaiah Wilson, I do not know him at all. I did some work trying to find out some stuff last night. You know, one source said to me, look, this is a kid who his tape – and this was a scout who told me this. His tape matched where he was drafted. He wasn't overdrafted in the scout's opinion. A guy who's been in the league for over 25 years. I said, look, I think he's really talented. The question is, and the Titans have illuminated, did you want to play football?
Yeah.
Does it matter to him? If I'm Kansas City, or any team for that matter, who needs a tackle and who is looking at a 22-year-old former first-round pick, who's saying, we'll give him a fresh start, I think the question becomes, like, if you can get him for, like, a sixth-round pick,
yeah,
you just bring him in, sit him down, and say, look, if you fail, that's your problem.
Yep.
It's a sixth-round pick, man. Like, we don't care. You're a lotto ticket here. A team that already invested a first-round pick had enough of you.
Yep.
So we'll give you the best coaching staff in the league. We'll give you a shot to play with Patrick Mahomes. We'll give you a shot to protect Patrick Mahomes. If it doesn't work out, you're on the first plane out of town.
Yep.
And I think for Kansas City, with some cap issues at the moment, with a big-time need, that could be a gift from heaven if you can straighten it out. And if you can't, who cares?
Yeah.
Then just move. to me, there's no downside. I mean, there really isn't. And the one thing that matters with the Chiefs, it's a strong locker room. It's a lot of guys. I mean, he's not going to come in. Like, I see people like, well, you know, maybe the Jets. It's like, who the heck is keeping him in line with the Jets?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you come to Kansas City, you're on that offense. I mean, you're in a room with Mitchell Schwartz, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's Andy Reid. That's a lot of guys who have a lot more jewelry on their hands than you do. So I think that stuff matters.
I think that makes all the sense in the world for exactly that reason. So I won't just repeat what you said in a different accent. I'll move on to the next thing. But I could not agree more that if they think there's anything to reclaim there, virtually no risk. Something not Chiefs related, but man, just unendingly interesting. We've talked about Deshaun Watson 1,000 times. We may talk about him more here in a second. But now the Russell Wilson thing, and maybe it's cooled down a smidge at this point, but it bubbled up there a little bit in a way that for Russell Wilson's agent to say, hey, Adam Schefter, we're not asking for a trade, but if we were, here are the teams you would go to, is crazy. It's crazy.
And notice this, and I actually give him credit for this, and I don't know this man at all. Mark Rogers, who is the agent for Wilson, who is not he's not a Tom Condon in the business, a Todd France who represents a million quarterbacks. He put his name to it.
Yes.
Like, one of those guys, hey, listen, Adam, it's off the record, just say you got it from the source. Now, anyone who's in the business understands where it came from.
Yep.
But you give yourself at least, like, a tiny bit of cover.
Yep.
I give him credit for just being like, yeah, I don't care. You can put my name to it. Here's the four teams you would go to. That is a shot across the bow
yes.
to Seattle. Like, yes. And I don't care. People can sit there. Well, he hasn't asked for a trade. Okay, that's fine. That's like saying, hey, I'm not going to break up with you.
Yes.
But if I did, here are the four girls I'd go date.
I used this analogy whatever day this was that this happened earlier this week. I used the exact same analogy. You are breaking up.
I mean, it's can you imagine sitting down at dinner with a significant other and go, listen, honey, if we break up,
yes,
these four friends of yours, that's
yes.
who I'd call first.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Yes.
But what makes no sense, and I'll spoil my column for Monday on the show here. You know, with the Texans and Watson, I get it with Watson. Watson looks at them and goes, oh, I don't want to be any part of that.
Right.
Like, I want out. With Wilson and the Seahawks, how do you not look across the table and go, all right, you know what? Maybe it's not perfect,
mm-hmm.
but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is probably – like, if you're Seattle, you're thinking, we're not doing any better than this. And if you're Wilson, you've got to be thinking, man, I've never had a losing season. I've gone to the playoffs every year but one. The year we didn't go, we went 9-7. Dude, I have DK Metcalf. I have Tyler Lockett. I've got a defensive by the end of the year playing actually pretty well. And they try to win. They try to win every year in Seattle. Like, I don't understand. And then he puts out this list, and I'm like, Dallas?
Yep.
Dallas sucks. I'm sorry. The Raiders. Okay, look, I get the offensive weapons. You're like, okay. But the Raiders have no defense, and you're in a division with Mahomes.
Yep.
That's a losing proposition. The Saints I get, although I actually would pay to see Mickey Loomis doing the galaxy brain math to get him to the cap. Do you know if they got him and the cap was $180 million, they'd be $101 million over the cap.
My goodness.
I have to see that happen. Like, yeah. I just need to see Mickey Loomis with 72 hours shaving off $100 million. It would be they should turn that into an HBO special.
Yes.
But then the one that kills me, the Bears.
Yes.
Look, I am based out of a suburb of Chicago, and people on Chicago radio, normally you hear something like that. Fans are calling in, like, oh my God, we got to get. Fans are like, has he seen this team? Like, does he understand? Like, we can talk him out of it. Like, it was, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, if you come to Chicago, they can't afford Allen Robinson.
Mm.
So, who are you throwing to exactly?
Yeah.
Like, it is just, I don't understand it. It's so bizarre. I just can't imagine that this ends with him getting free. Now, maybe in a year or something. And who knows? The NFL's getting crazier by the day. But I can't imagine that Wilson really feels like his best shot to win is in Dallas or Vegas or Chicago. I don't buy it. I don't see it.
Again, I'll take every single syllable of that, and I'll take it to the bank. The only sort of like sort of devil's advocate point that I'd try to make, I guess, is that it's not even about the situations that he thinks he'd be winning in. He just wants a situation where he feels like people are listening to him. And if that's true, if that's close to true, at that point, it ends up feeling like an enormous indictment on Seattle. We're like, listen, man, you don't have to let him make the draft picks. But if he doesn't feel like they're listening to what he thinks would be good for the Seahawks offense, he's Russell Wilson. Like that's just got to be a bad relationship.
I totally agree with you, but let me play devil's advocate back.
Okay.
Okay. If that's the reasoning, then what are you doing putting the Cowboys and the Raiders on your list?
Great point.
Do you think John Gruden is going to listen to? John Gruden's going to be like, I'm here for the next 39 years. Okay, I'm not listening to you. And Jerry Jones. Jimmy Johnson couldn't get Jerry Jones.
This is such a good point.
Like, you think Russell Wilson's going to Dallas and getting Jerry Jones to just go, oh, yeah, sure, Russ, whatever you want? That's not going to ask Dak how that's going.
Yeah. No, but that's a good point.
It's so bizarre. Like, and I don't know if you read the piece of Athletic. It was great. That you know, three different reporters based out of Seattle who did some work on it.
Yeah.
It was really thorough. And they talked about, you know, how he was seeing he wants to get an offense like Mahomes. It's like, look, I get that. But let's be real. How many teams are set up to do that? Like, the Chiefs play like that because they can.
Yeah.
They have the best tight end maybe of all time. Like, they've Reed. They've got all these weapons. Yeah, Tyreek Hill, who's at least Hall of Fame caliber. You know, the Bills play like that. Okay, that's fine. They had the leading receiver. They got another guy. And part of that is they can't run the ball for a yard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I get it. I also understand Seattle's point of going, look, man, we opened up the offense. You turn the ball over 10 times in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, so, look, I think ultimately they figure it out. But it's just, I understand his frustration, and I don't think Seattle's not culpable at all here. But I hate the false equivalency that happens to always be on Twitter where it's like, well, you know, it's just like the Texans. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not even close to being like this. The Texans are a tire fire.
Yep.
Seattle just went 12-4.
I feel like we've asked you this every week, and I'm just going to keep doing it for the rest of time. Do you feel any differently about anything Deshaun Watson-wise after another week of just sort of watching all of that marinate? Apparently, Watson met with David Culley and reiterated he's not playing. Right. He doesn't want to play with the Texans anymore, which just reading that tweet as a Texans fan must have been such a crushing roller coaster. Because I saw, Watson met with Culley. I wonder what, he still wants out. That's not ideal.
Every time I read about the Texans, I hear that one song in my head that, you know, hello, darkness, my old friend, and it's just on loop all the time. It just never ends. And it's just somebody sitting there, like, just, like, silently weeping with a Bic lighter. It's so sad. And I don't feel bad at all for the organization, because screw them. I mean, they're the ones who hired Easterby and let this whole thing go to hell in a handbasket. But, No, honestly, I don't feel any different. I think this is here's what I'll say. For anyone who cares about this stuff and is trying to follow along and watch it, here's the date you need to keep in mind. April 29th. It's the opening night of the NFL draft. And to me, that is the deadline. Now, maybe you want to show the actual deadline for a deal or something would be a couple days before it. But if the Texans don't trade him by then, what reason do they have to trade him until next offseason? Like, at that point, all right, you're going through a season. You might as well just keep him and say, look, Deshaun, you don't want to play. Cool. Then you're going to forfeit your whole salary this year. And if you do want to play, then great. Then we have Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
And if you're really willing to sit out the entire year, then next offseason, when you still will have the exact same amount of value, it's going to be 26, it's still going to be signed for 4 more years. Okay, fine. We'll trade you then. But if they don't, look, right now they keep saying we're not interested. We're not going to take it. You know, apparently teams are just leaving voicemails like it's speed dating.
Such a good visual. It's such a good visual.
It's incredible. Hey, Jack, listen, 3 firsts. Call me back. But it makes you feel like at some point the Texans are trying to kind of just get teams to up the offer and up the offer and up the offer. And that's not a bad strategy. To be fair, like, I don't blame them for doing that. But if they don't trade him, I don't think free agency is a deadline because they're not going to replace him in free agency anyway.
Right.
If they can't get picks, if they don't get picks, if they go into the draft and their first pick as it stands right now, third-round pick, then I think you have no reason to try. Like, why would you trade him in June?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. At that point, the heck with it. You've already dealt with all the PR nonsense. Let's just sit it out, deal with it, and then either he plays or he doesn't. But to me, I think we're looking at this for a while. I feel bad for David Kelly because he is the sacrificial lamb in all this. And I don't know how he wins with that team, even with Watson, certainly without.
And he also might not be the head coach already, essentially. Like, the Josh McCown, I don't know if the Josh McCown thing is real or not. At this point, I'm hesitant to say that the Texans are doing anything fictionally because it just seems like every single ridiculous rumor has ended up coming true. But, yeah, I mean, that's – listen, Eric Bieniemy should have gotten a head coaching job, but being the offensive coordinator in Kansas City has got to feel pretty cushy at this point.
I'll tell you what, it's better than a Houston head coaching job. Like, if you're Bieniemy, you absolutely want to be a head coach. And you would have loved a lot of these jobs after this offseason. But you look around, and you look at Houston, you're like, man, I don't have those problems.
Yeah.
I'll deal with that. Like, to me, as much as it has been, in my opinion, very unfair, Eric Bieniemy, that he's not a head coach at this point. I also think he's going to be at some point, and you want to land in a good situation. Even if that takes an extra, you want to be somewhere where the people really buy into you and they believe in you, where you think you can win and succeed. You want no part of that disaster down in Houston, where if you're David Culley, I get it. Like, you weren't going to get a head coaching job anywhere else. You probably just figure, you know what, the heck with it. I'll take a shot at it. But you're Bieniemy. You're eventually going to land a good job. Don't rush it. Don't end up in something like that. He's definitely better off being a coordinator for another year than being down there with the Texans right now.
Matt, you're the best. Go yell at some well-meaning Midwesterner and teach him how it really is.
They don't need to deal with that kind of pain.
That's probably true. Thank you, Matt. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care.
Matt Verderam of FanSided. Follow him on Twitter, at Matt Verderam. Also, the Stack in the Box podcast and the column. He spoiled it for us earlier. Go read it on Monday as he writes about all the things going on with Russell Wilson and what he's looking for in the future. All of his work is just absolutely unstoppably good everywhere. So follow him on Twitter, at Matt Verderam. You can get everything that he does through there.
This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Matt Verderam of FanSided for being so generous with his time on a weekly basis on Almost Entirely Sports. If you want to hear our full conversation with him, you can check it out on the AES podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. During the break, Blake and I'm Josh Briscoe. Blake Schneider's on the other side of the glass. We were talking about a series of TV shows, not a series, but a series of series. And I'll blast through a couple things really quick, and then I want to circle back to a few Chiefs topics in the last half hour of the show as well. Do we know how much longer we got yet, Blake?
Yeah, we're going till about 56.
You love to see that. We got plenty of time talking about the things I want to talk about here. I will give a very brief, completely spoiler-free take on WandaVision, because Blake was asking, we were talking about some superhero movie stuff, and Blake was asking, should I watch WandaVision? The second-to-last episode came out on Disney Plus last night. This will be completely spoiler-free. I'm going to only talk about it as if I'm talking to Blake, who has not started it and isn't even sure if he wants to watch it or whatever. If you haven't watched WandaVision, don't worry about it. This 2 minutes of it will be totally safe. It's a very good show. That is my official larger scale take. What I've said before in terms of, like, if you've got superhero fatigue in terms of movies and TV shows, I totally get it. I do too. If you love superheroes, I think you'll like this one also. I think you'll like WandaVision still. If you're just soaking up Marvel stuff, you're probably already watching it. But if you're someone like me who saw that WandaVision was 6 episodes in before you started watching any of them, which is what I did, or if you just go, ah, man, I don't know if I need more superhero stuff in my life. I never watched, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It just seemed like a lot. I wasn't that interested by it. If you missed a couple of Marvel movies, as I did, I've seen almost all of them, I think, but I've weirdly got a pocket of, like, didn't see any of the new Spider-Man, didn't see, I missed Captain Marvel and something else recently as well, I think. I missed a handful of them, saw the big ones, and saw all of the earlier ones. Except for Ant-Man 1. I saw Ant-Man 2, but not the first one.
You gotta see the first one.
I've heard that it's really good.
That was the one, like, because I was talking about this yesterday. That's the one that kind of got me back into the track of watching, going back to the beginning and trying to watch them in chronological order if I could.
I'm okay. Cough, get some water.
I'm good.
Staple your tongue to the bottom of your mouth. It seemed like there was too much happening.
My tongue started moving faster than my mouth could.
I have that problem frequently. The last thing to do its job is almost always my brain. But thank God that radio is a viable profession. It's the only thing I can do.
It's my only source of income.
And it's because of chronological.
I went to college and they said you can only do one thing.
You can do this. You can talk into this microphone, hit these buttons, and say chronological on the radio. But even if you've got some gaps in your like Marvel viewing or whatever, oh God, now I'm doing it, or whatever. And I ended up passing on almost all of the new DC movies and everything just because superhero fatigue, not really their fault, just not that alluring to me. WandaVision does some super duper interesting, weird storytelling things that would stand totally alone, separated from the superhero kind of like underlying storyline of it all, especially kind of out the gate. So if out of the first couple episodes you're going, what is this show? I would say honestly, it has earned the little bit of patience that you may need to give it through the first few episodes, just because it is so interesting. The payoff is good. The process I think is great. It's just it is a fun show. It's a fun, weird show that does some things in a really unique way. And for me, that's almost that may be even a stronger endorsement than saying it's a great show. I've made this comparison a few times and talked about this show a few times. There's a show called Maniac on Netflix that is it's like a mini series. It's like 8 or 9 episodes, I think, with Jonah Hill and Emma Stone. And it is not a great show. It's certainly not a perfect show, but it does some very interesting storytelling, like structure things. And I've mentioned that show on the radio a dozen times at this point because I think it stuck with me. I continue to think about it even for all of its imperfections because it's genuinely like really unique and really interesting. And if you're like, hey, should I watch it? I would say if you want to watch something different, yeah, watch Maniac and certainly watch WandaVision. I think WandaVision is probably doing some of the things that Maniac does much differently, but in a much like cleaner, efficient, successful way. But I like weird unique storytelling, so I would say watch WandaVision. Next episode comes out at the I think Friday will be the last episode, so worth your time. Let's go to you want to go back to the Matt Verderam sort of vein of some Chiefs things. I told you I teased something at the very top of the show, and then also Blake, I know you've got like a draft thing you want to float out there, so we'll hit both of these things. I teased at the very beginning of the show, really irresponsibly, because now it's an hour and 35 minutes after I said it the first time, but I really do think that early this week, I think this would have been on like Sunday or Monday now at this point. But early this week, I think the Chiefs got the best news they're going to get this offseason. Better than whatever free agent they sign next, better than whoever their first-round draft pick is, better than whoever they're able to re-sign who might be on the bubble right now. Because as of this time last Sunday, we didn't know if Mitchell Schwartz was going to try to play football again. And then he tweeted out back on the 24th. He said, injury update, I'm getting surgery today. I was hoping to recover enough to get back for the playoffs/Super Bowl, but that didn't happen. It's time to address the issue. The recovery process isn't too long, which is nice. Looking forward to a healthy 2021. Our own Ali Trost, host of Sports Saturday, found the details from Brooke Schwartz's Instagram story, Mitchell Schwartz's wife, They were in Dallas for a quote-unquote spinal surgery. Didn't do surgery earlier, hoping he'd be good for the playoffs. Did treatment daily and said that it's a quick recovery. Later, on the 24th, Schwartz tweeted out another picture of him and Brooks saying, successful surgery. Now the recovery process starts. Thanks to everyone who reached out, message, etc. today. And then, you know, thanks to everyone who reached out and thanks to his wife for taking care of him. This is bigger news than I think we would have given. Let me phrase it this way. If the Chiefs this week would have acquired the best right tackle in football, it would have led every show for the last 5 days. Rightfully so, because that would be a huge addition and also would really address the biggest issue the Chiefs had in the Super Bowl, when in reality, we found out that the best right tackle in the NFL is not planning to retire and is planning to be back for a healthy 2021, which is enormous. To get slightly specific, Seth Kizer did a great job of this in the Chief of the North newsletter, like right after the news came out. He went back and he looked some at both Super Bowls that the Chiefs have been in these last 2 years. What they were having Mitch Schwartz do against the Niners was, here's you, and here's D Ford, or here's Nick Bosa, or whatever. We're going to let you take care of that guy. All right? That's your job. Then what that does for, you know, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif is now he's helping Austin Ryder, or Austin Ryder's helping LDT. But you're not, but LDT does not have to worry about Mitch Schwartz at all. Whoever the right guard ends up being next year, if it's LDT again, if it's Kelechi Osemele, if it's Andrew Wiley, if it's somebody else.
LDT is still up in the air.
That was the first one that I said. Thank you, Blake.
Sorry.
It's all right. I'm
also researching over here. Sorry.
I could see. That's all right. It's all right. I had to say it. Otherwise, someone was going to text the text line. So it could be one of those guys. It could be LDT who could be coming back.
You're right.
Opted out last year. I don't know if he's planning on being back. It could be Kelechi Osemele. It could be somebody else. It could be Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. If he wants to play again, still up in the air at this point, but he could be back.
And we still don't know about LDT.
It could be LDT. But whoever the right guard is, there is a very clear domino effect. And honestly, the Chiefs have done this with both of their tackles, with both Schwartz and Fisher over the last couple of years especially. They say, you're probably just going to take that dude there, and then the interior is going to be able, you're going to be able to help yourself cover some of your weak spots, whatever that ends up being. It's one of the reasons that the interior offensive line looked worse after Schwartz got hurt. It's because the math of that front changes. Mike Rimmer's played pretty well on the right side this year, but he's not Mitch Schwartz. So Andrew Wiley, because LDT opted out, so Andrew Wiley is now either not getting all the help that he could have gotten if Schwartz was there. Maybe he's edging over to the tackle side a little bit. And just the way the unit operates changes kind of at its core level. With Schwartz back, you basically end up having a four-man offensive line and Mitchell Schwartz whenever he's healthy. The one caveat is, he's having back surgery. Is he going to be the best right tackle in football again after having back surgery and after missing all this time, etc.? My optimism comes from a couple of places here. One is that it sounds like that he was legitimately thinking there was a chance he might be able to just play through it in the playoffs this year, which would obviously be excellent. It would have been excellent. And also the idea that the recovery process isn't too long makes me think that if they thought it was clearly, like, fully season-ending, he spent most of the year on IR. He didn't get moved over there. I don't know that most is even true. I think it may have been around week 10 or week 11 when he was officially put on injured reserve. If they were confident that his injury was definitely going to knock him out for, you know, 6 months or whatever, I think he probably has surgery much sooner and starts the recovery process sooner. The fact that not only he was trying to hold out hope and then also wait on surgery makes me hope, if not fully believe, makes me hope that he'll have plenty of recovery time before next season starts. I'm, again, doing a decent amount of hoping there, but I'm relatively optimistic. And look, I mean, back surgeries often lead to more back surgeries. Does he want to play one more year? Is he going to try to play three more years? We're going to have to figure that out going forward. And it also doesn't change anything necessarily about what the Chiefs should do in the draft. It does probably change what they have to do, though, which is that I'd be really surprised if we saw Eric Fisher at left tackle anytime within the first 8 weeks of the season. And honestly, with that being said, it would probably surprise me if he is on the roster next year, just because it seems like it should be a relatively clean break to pick up, off the top of my head, $11 or $12 million, I think, against the cap if they were to release him fully this offseason. Well, now maybe you're still drafting a left tackle in the first round that you think can come in and start day one. Or maybe you think Lucas Niang can be that guy who opted out right before his rookie season would have begun. Letting Mike Grimmers be your one and only option at left tackle would probably be met with some pushback, considering how that went in the Super Bowl. But if you have Schwartz at right tackle, maybe you have Niang and Rimmers competing for that spot. Whoever wins it, wins it. Maybe you have one of those guys just trying to hold that spot for 8 weeks because they do think Fisher's going to be back and look like his old self even after the Achilles injury in the AFC Championship game. They have options there. Also, if they do draft somebody at left tackle, then maybe Lucas Niang continues to develop and he's the guy that you think takes over from Mitch Schwartz in a year or two at right tackle, but he's not immediately, you know, help us, your only hope. So it gives the Chiefs some flexibility, and in a worst-case scenario, I think, gives the Chiefs some flexibility. In a best-case scenario, it gives the Chiefs the best right tackle in the NFL again, which is huge. It's not the sexiest acquisition they'll make, because it's a guy that got it. Basically, the news is that Mitch Schwartz got surgery and said he wants to play again in 2021. That is not as fun as it would be if they even sign, you know, Kenny Golladay, which I think would be a blast. But it's huge, important news. Blake, I know you've got some Chiefs draft takes. I'm just gonna sit here. I'm gonna judge them. Essentially, I'm going to tell you is this draft take, is this guy you like or whatever, does this make sense to me? I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Present your arguments, your cases, your takes.
So I broke down a couple of them yesterday with me and Allie on Sports Saturday, and I just looking at these guys even further. There's about three guys right now, and I know this is gonna kind of come as a shock to you. Everybody, to start it off, everybody's been obviously focusing on tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to what I saw from Lucas Niang and his college tape.
Which in his last year at TCU, by the way, you probably know this, but for everybody else, he was playing through some significant injury issues. His pre-injury injury tape was first-round tape.
Hands down. Great hips, quick feet for being a big dude. He did a very good job of just understanding leverage, which I like. And that he didn't play this year. Okay, we know he opted out. But as long as he has stayed in good condition and been as involved as he can be as a draft pick with the Chiefs who opted out of a season, you know, I'm not really actually sure what all he could and couldn't do, if he was able to do anything,
it's,
or if he was
hazy.
Able to not do anything, you know, if he was able to get the, you know, if they, I don't even know. I'm assuming they were allowed to have the playbooks.
He signed his rookie deal.
Yeah,
he's
okay,
a member of the team, so I'm guessing he got the playbook and then pieced out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
there could be some interesting, like, Players Association stuff in there, but I don't really know what the answer is, to be honest.
So my thing is, yes, tackle's going to be a big focus, but if I go off what I've originally said about Lucas Niang, I feel pretty comfortable with his skill set and what he's able to do. It's just going to be, you know, tackle's a hard position.
Yep.
Regardless, you can't just throw somebody in here, and if they're not good, oh, well. It's got to be something to be taken care of, especially on a team for Patrick Mahomes. So,
yep.
But to start off with, I have a couple guys that are in the interior line that I really want to talk about.
Rubbing my hands together.
Number one, Wyatt Davis.
Yes.
Out of Ohio State.
Yes.
He's a 2019 All-American, interior guy. He can play both guard positions. He mainly starts at right. Somebody that I thought looked very aggressive, as well as can run the zone offense very well. He's quick with his feet. He's not super tall. He's average guard, 6'4", about 3'10", 3'26", actually. So he was a guy that I thought anchored down a good offense there in Ohio State. Obviously, can play against high-level competition. And I think he's going to be available at 31 as somebody who can interiorly, because, yeah, we need tackles. But I think if we start kind of thinking back to the days when we had an offensive line that reminded us a little bit more of the Casey Wigman, Willie Rofe, Brian Waters, Will Shields era, we had four solid linemen. And really right now what the Chiefs have in the past couple of years has been two solid tackles, and you just sprinkle in guys in the interior where you can. And I think that's really going to start hurting us down the line more than just having a solid left tackle or a solid right tackle. If we're assuming Mitchell Schwartz is going to come back, what I'm looking at is somebody that can really anchor down that interior line. Which brings me to my next guy.
Hit me.
Landon Dickerson.
Yes.
Center out of Alabama. When you watch this guy play, he is an absolute stud. Now, you're thinking center, we don't really need a center, you can just kind of pick and plug somebody. No. I think if you have an absolute dominant center, you think of guys like Jeff Saturday, I think when you have a leader that can communicate with the offensive line and actually be the number one anchor, the guy who touches the football before the quarterback ever gets a chance to, if they can communicate with Patrick Mahomes in a solid center, somebody who's going to come in, not only be a leader as soon as he gets into the locker room, which is what he did at Alabama, not only be somebody who's going to be vocal, but somebody who's also going to come in here and actually stick up for their players. I mean, if you watch the guy play, he's rough and rowdy. And he'll be the first one to come to your side when something's going wrong, which is what we need as a team for a guy like Patrick Mahomes. We want somebody that's going to be kind of the glue that holds that entire line together, and it starts with the guy that has the ball in his hands before it ever, you know, before anything else. The third guy that I like, bumping back out to tackle, that to me, for some reason, and I'm not really sure what makes me like him so much, but it's Texas offensive tackle Samuel Cosmi. Not sure where, I really don't know where his name has been on the big board.
I'm trying to find, the NFL mock draft database is they've just got a very good system, and their mock drafts are fun. They also have a new feature where they chart where guys are projected and where they've been going in mocks and stuff. Wyatt Davis currently overall rank is at 31, so like that is on the nose. I was about to say, Dickerson I've seen around 31 constantly. I'm trying to see where Cosme's ended up.
Cosme, to me, the reason he sticks out to me is because, one, he's a big guy, 6'7". Now, he is a little undersized. He's only about 309 pounds. I'm not worried about size on linemen because you're going to get to the NFL. You're going to have the cream of the crop when it comes to training, nutrition.
Cosme's looking like towards the end of the first round, maybe a smidge ahead of where the Chiefs will end up picking.
Okay.
As of right now. But the right range, though.
Yeah. So, to me, what impressed me about him is his size and his ability to move. At 6'7", you know, Eric Fisher is actually a prime example. Eric Fisher is a very athletic tackle at 6'7". So is Mitchell Schwartz, but Eric Fisher is really probably a little bit more athletic.
It's one of the reasons that he went one over Luke Jokel.
Exactly. And look where Jokel ended up. And look where Fisher's at.
Out of the league in like three or four years.
Yeah.
That's a tough pick. That draft class also. Woof.
The thing that sticks out to me is he was a freshman All-American. He was also second big team All-12 honors in 2019. I'm sorry, in 2020. No, I'm sorry, yeah, 2019. And then he left a little bit early in the 2020 season to get ready for the 2021 draft. What, for some reason, stuck out to me the most is I love linemen that have wrestling backgrounds.
This is so on brand for you. I don't even know why. It just makes total sense to me.
I just love guys that understand what they can do with their body. And I think wrestling is a sport that really gets you in tune with everything that you can do. And I know we're running out of time here. We're going to have to go in here about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. But
I'll give you overarching takes in response to that instead of going super specific.
I think he's a good fit. I love guys that can understand their body. He's got good leverage. They can beef him up, but he plays both sides. He's played both tackles and started both tackles multiple different times in college. And I think if you've got tackle problems, a guy who can swing either side is going to be perfect.
So here's what I'm thinking across. You know, you've got a dude at all three sort of sections of the line there. You got a tackle, a guard, and a center. At this point, I would still be pretty surprised if they end up taking a center at the end of the first round, although that is one of the positions that they actually have invested in. It's a little bit over the course of the last several years. Mitch Morse was a second-round pick. Obviously, they didn't end up paying him. You run out of money eventually. But I think if I had to put money on it, my guess would be that Austin Ryder is your starting center again this year. And also, I'm not mad about that, in part for some of the reasons that you mentioned. In terms of why you think it's a position worth evaluating and why Landon Dickerson might be that guy, the Chiefs, I believe, really do trust Austin Ryder to handle the middle of that offensive line and what he's reading in real time, the relationship with Patrick Mahomes. I bet he'll be back. I still look back at tackle because You may not love it, but I think the Chiefs' strategy is, generally speaking, let us lock down our tackles, and then we'll be able to find guys. LDT is a sixth-round pick. Zach Fulton was a sixth-round pick. Find guys later. Nick Allegrani in the seventh played okay this year. I think that strategy has proven to be at least understandable for them in a way that will really inform what we see in the very early rounds of the draft. Thank you, Blake Schneiders, for all of your evaluation and the production over the course of the show today. Thanks to Matt Verderam. We'll talk to you again next week, and also tomorrow night, almost entirely sports, 7 o'clock. We'll talk to you then here. Bye, Mom!